59861, Hernandez versus Ben Vera. Speaking for the appellant, Mr. Stacy for the appellant.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. We've all heard the saying that it's better to seek forgiveness than to ask for permission. This saying doesn't apply to the justice court's jurisdiction. Justice courts must seek permission to exercise their jurisdiction. The courts have special and limited jurisdiction, and their jurisdiction is derived from specific grants of statutory authority. Contrary to the district court's decision below, the justice court's jurisdiction isn't limited by specific statutory prohibitions. Under Article 6, Section 8, Nevada's Constitution, only the legislature can grant the justice court jurisdiction, and it hasn't granted the justice court's jurisdiction to preside over coroner's inquests in non-coroner's district counties like Clark County. Only one statute grants justice courts authority to preside over coroner's inquests, and that's NRS Chapter 259. And this statute limits the justice court's jurisdiction to coroner's district counties. NRS 259.0102 says, quote, "The provisions of this chapter, except NRS 259.025 and 259.150 to 259.180 inclusive, do not apply to any county where a coroner is appointed pursuant to the provisions of NRS 244.163. In Clark County, the coroner is appointed pursuant to the provisions of NRS 244.163. The sections that cover coroner's inquests and grant justice courts the jurisdiction to preside over them expressly do not apply to non-coroner's district counties like Clark County. The sections that specifically do apply to non-coroner's district counties have nothing to do with coroner's inquests or justice court's jurisdiction to preside over them. Notably, originally no provisions in Chapter 259 were applied to non-coroner's district counties. This is the 1963 version of the statute. The statute was subsequently amended in 1969 to make certain provisions applicable and not others. The certain provisions that remain applicable were those that I previously mentioned that have nothing to do with coroner's inquests or the justice court's jurisdiction to preside over those inquests. If the legislature didn't mean to limit the justice court's jurisdiction to coroner's district counties, it could have corrected this issue in 1969 and amended the statute and specifically provided that certain provisions would apply to non-coroner's district counties. It did not do that. The district court's decision presumes that the legislature intended for non-coroner's district counties to have the option to use justice courts. Such intent cannot be discerned from the plain language of the statute. The plain language indicates, as discussed above, that the legislature intended to limit the justice court's jurisdiction to coroner's district counties. Clark County's use of the justice courts under the ordinance expands the justice court's jurisdiction to non-coroner's district counties. This is a violation of Article 6, Section 8 of Nevada's Constitution because only the legislature, not Clark County, can determine the justice court's jurisdiction. Moving on to separation of powers, the ordinance violates separation of powers by mandating that justices of the peace perform duties of a prosecutor in aid of the executive branch. Article 3, Section 1-1 of Nevada's Constitution prohibits the judiciary from exercising any functions appertaining to the executive branch. According to
how is the ordinance as written, how does it mandate the justice of the peace act as a prosecutor?
It specifically says that the chief justice of the peace shall appoint a qualified magistrate to preside over coroner's inquest in Clark County. Shall is mandatory, it's not permissive.
I understand.
And that the magistrate shall be a justice of the peace to have no choice, so it imposes these duties. And
respond to the question.
And
the question
it's exactly
how does it,
yes, sir,
have them affect the prosecutor's duty? That
okay.
Is the question, well, not the other. I understand the other.
Okay. A coroner's inquest is a criminal investigation for purposes of determining whether a crime is committed in the course of death, and if so, to lay the evidentiary foundation for a criminal prosecution. That's why the DA's office is involved in the coroner's inquest. It's a criminal investigation, which this court in Del Papa versus Seven said specifically is an executive function and is for purposes of criminal prosecution, which is also an executive function. The judicial power and the judicial function is limited to hearing and determining justiciable controversies between litigants. That's the judicial power. Any functions that it exercises in furtherance of that power must be linked to that power. And if they're linked to an executive power and function, as in this instance, like criminal investigation and criminal prosecution, if what they're doing is derived from that and not hearing determined justiciable controversies, then it's a violation of the separation of powers.
Two questions. And separation of powers application to local government opposed to state government. And then secondly, the functions that are derived in the statute. What is the role of the Justice of the Peace? Isn't it to make sure there's a fair procedure?
Yes, it applies to local governments like Clark County when they're exercising state executive function, which is what they're doing here. When the Clark County DA's office is investigating to determine whether a crime was committed for purposes of potential prosecution, it is executing a state executive function. And this is shown by the ordinance, which defines the prosecutor's authority that they're acting under, in this instance, under NRS statute, which gives the prosecutor the authority to investigate and to prosecute state employees who commit crimes while performing their duties. So they're acting as a state prosecutor here, and therefore separation of powers principles.
Is this not an investigatory process opposed to an accusatory process?
No, it's an accusatory process, Your Honor. This isn't Hanna. Hanna was a situation where you had investigation and fact-finding for legislative purposes. So at the end of the day after the investigation, the findings were then submitted to Congress and to the President for purpose of determining whether additional legislation was necessary. It had nothing to do with criminal prosecution. Here, the findings will serve no legislative purpose whatsoever. The findings are for purposes of laying a predicate as to whether or not a crime has been committed, for purposes of advising the district attorney's office as to whether to prosecute, and it has the public branding function of the accusatory commission in Jenkins.
Are there any reported cases that
have deemed a coroner's inquest process comparable to that at issue here to be accusatory rather than investigative? Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor. The closest case that I was able to find was Jenkins, and the reasons discussed in my brief, I believe,
Jenkins, the Massachusetts court, in the Globe decision and the Kennedy decision, rejected the idea that the coroner's inquest was accusatory of a Jenkins test, and so too did the Washington courts, correct?
I don't know that that's the case with the Kennedy case. The public inquest, as was going to take place against Teddy Kennedy and Chappaquiddick, that a public inquest risks being accusatory under the principles of Jenkins, and we're going to take that issue off the table entirely by closing the doors to the proceeding and not making it public, and only making it public after the inquest and the prosecuting authorities have determined not to prosecute, or if they do prosecute after the criminal trial and there's been a finding of either guilt or innocent.
So you're saying you read the Kennedy case to say we don't have to reach the Jenkins issue because it
doesn't have the public branding function of Jenkins because we closed the doors to it, so we don't have to worry about that. As to the Washington cases, those cases are all very distinguishable The Washington cases I've seen have been using it for separation of powers principles, and those cases are very distinguishable from the case of Barr, because the Washington Constitution, like the federal Constitution, doesn't have a specific provision like we do in Article 3 that says that the judiciary can't exercise the functions of the...
Right, I was interested in courts that have considered Jenkins and applied it to an inquest proceeding.
I have not specifically seen Jenkins applied to an inquest proceeding.
Except in the Massachusetts case, and there they just distinguished it.
By closing the doors to it, they said we're going to take the public branding issue off the table so that Jenkins would apply. According to judicial powers and functions cannot include powers or functions that are derived from the basic executive powers. The judicial power is the power to hear and determine justiciable controversies between litigants. A judicial function is the exercise of this power. The executive power is the enforcement of laws enacted by the legislature. It includes criminal investigations and prosecutions. The purpose of the coroner's inquest is to investigate whether a death was caused by some criminal act, and so to furnish the evidentiary foundation for a criminal prosecution. This is an executive power and function. The duties that Clark County has imposed upon the Justice of the Peace as presiding officer have nothing to do with the judicial power to hear and determine justiciable controversies. The Justice of the Peace is conscripted to serve as an adjunct, advisory, and investigating instrumentality of the executive branch in its role as prosecutor. Accordingly, the prescribed powers and functions are derived from the executive rather than the judicial power, and this violates the separation of powers. Moving on to the due process argument.
Before you did that, counsel, could you specify a specific ordinance section that you say results in a finding, predicate finding, for criminal fault?
The findings that I off the top of my head, I don't know which one is specific pertaining to findings, but
I have in front of me ordinance 2.12.0.08 letter M7. Which specifically recounts the set of interrogatories tendered to the panel jury, quote, shall deal only with questions of fact, and shall not deal with questions of fault or guilt. And following up on that, Ordinance 2.12.140 provides that the findings of a set of interrogatories shall not be binding on the district attorney's office, nor shall the findings have any conclusive effect in any future civil or criminal proceeding. Your argument today is that this process provides a predicate basis for criminal prosecution and is a violation under your separation of powers argument of executive branch duties. I'm trying to find out where in the ordinance did you get that.
Notably, they weren't in binding, they weren't binding conclusion of the commission in Jenkins. I just want to point that out. Secondly, the whole purpose, historical, statutory, common law purpose of the coroner's inquest for 200 years of American history has been the criminal investigation as to whether a death was committed by a crime that sort of laid the foundation for criminal prosecution. That's why the DA's office is involved here.
That's not what the United States Supreme Court said in Hannah. And you've distinguished this ordinance from Hannah, and I'm trying to understand the basis for that distinction. Because in Hannah, the court made very clear that it was a fact-finding process. That's what this ordinance seems to say as well.
Your Honor, in the fact-finding process in Hannah was for purposes of legislative action. The fact-finding process in Jenkins was for purposes of criminal prosecution.
But this ordinance doesn't identify
the purpose of the fact-finding process at all? What is the purpose of the fact-finding process if the prosecutor's involved and he's exercising his authority pursuant to a prosecutor's authority to investigate and to criminally prosecute state employees who commit crimes in the performance of their duties? And in light of the historical context,
I appreciate the concern you're expressing, but I'm trying to determine what's presented for this court to decide is the constitutionality of an ordinance that, as near as I can tell, is silent as to the purpose of this process.
Exactly, Your Honor, and that's why when
so we are left to speculate on the purpose of this process.
No, you're not, Your Honor. And the reason being is that when you use terms that have a historical significance and meaning, that have a statutory significance and meaning, that have a common law significance and meaning.
You are referring to ordinances?
I apologize. Yes. When a legislature passes a statute that uses terms that have a usual and common meaning in a certain context, like they do here, coroner's inquest, prosecutor, inquest investigation, it means a criminal investigation for purposes of prosecution. That's what this is all about. What are the purposes of these findings if not to determine whether a crime was committed? As a matter of fact, on page 48 of my opening brief, I set forth what findings are permitted here without an express finding of guilt or fault. These findings were taken directly from Justice Bennett Herron's actual inquest panel interrogatories that she drafted to be used in the Lopez inquest in this situation. And these findings lay the factual predicate for guilt.
No, I thought she had questions.
Go ahead. Okay, so we're on the due process violation. The officer involved at the inquest, these are accusatory proceedings with all the relevant characteristics of the commission in Jenkins. So due process attaches here. One, they're limited to, and again, to answer your question, these characteristics distinguish the Jenkins Commission from the Civil Rights Commission in Hanna. This is how the Supreme Court itself has distinguished the Jenkins investigative proceeding for purposes of legislative action Hanna investigative proceeding for purposes of legislative action versus the Jenkins accusing proceedings. These factors are about to go over. One, it's limited to investigating criminal violations. That's the ordinance. Two, it does investigate civil matters. That's the ordinance. Three, it's limited to certain types of criminal activities. Here, it's whether a police officer has exercised his powers in a manner that is unjustified and exceeds his authority, whether he's committed murder. Four, the findings won't be used for legislative purposes here. Five, the sole purpose is to expose violations of criminal laws by specific officers, notably the inquest panel interrogatory specifically say you have to answer these inquests with regard to each specific officer. Six, they're a power to be used to find named individuals guilty of crimes. They're a power to brand named individuals as criminals in public. And it's being used to find the plaintiffs here guilty of violating criminal laws and to brand them as criminals in public. This is a public inquest. It's live on television. It's held in the regional, right here, in the Regional Justice Center, in a courtroom. It's presided over by a justice of the peace. It has a prosecutor. It has attorneys. It presents evidence. It has a jury. Of course the public is going to view this as all the indicia of a trial. Of course the public is going to view this as a trial. It is a public branding.
Counsel, what if the finding of the inquest is the officer in the room?
If the...
What does that do to your analysis of it is used as a predicate for criminal proceedings?
Under those circumstances, there may or may not be a criminal prosecution. The DA's office may still say, you know, I just disagree, I'm going to go ahead and prosecute under these circumstances. The DA's office may say, I take that guidance and I'm not going to go forward with the prosecution.
In the case of the fact-finding,
No, because it's still accusing, because it's investigating, it's not based upon, it's, the findings can establish guilt. It's a criminal investigation for purposes of determining whether crimes have been committed, and if it's...
I don't know if it says that. Yeah.
What else is it then? I ask you, what else is it, given the context and the history of coroner's inquest for 200 years in American society, what else is it? And if Clark County was going to depart so drastically from our notion of what a coroner's inquest is, wouldn't it have said it in the statute? It doesn't say that.
No, you have 5 minutes left.
I'd like to reserve that for rebuttals. The ordinance does not impose unconstitutional executive functions upon the justice presiding over the inquest. The plain language of the ordinance before the court, not some other ordinance, some other statute, indicates clearly that the inquest process created by the board is neither a criminal process nor a criminal proceeding. And in fact, Judge Proe and U.S. District Court analyzing this very same inquest statute came to the same conclusion, that it's not a criminal proceeding or prosecution. The role...
So it's a ordinance that has been adopted without a stated purpose.
It's not stated in the ordinance other than to say that it's an inquiry into the death of a person done in the manner prescribed in section 2.12080, where the circumstances support reasonable grounds to suspect the death has been occasioned by unnatural means. That's all the guidance that it gives, the language of the ordinance itself gives us as to its purpose. Later in the ordinance, toward the end, it talks about issuing a death certificate. I think the you want to get, skip to the very end, the end game of this ordinance, is that the inquest is one factor that the coroner uses along with scientific evidence and possibly an autopsy in making a determination of death that he puts on the death certificate, whether it be natural causes, accidental, suicidal, or homicide. This is not run as a prosecution. It's not run by the district attorney's office, despite the appellant's contentions to the contrary. The role of Mr. Laurent as the so-called prosecutor under the ordinance is to assist the presiding officer with the preparation for the inquest and to work at the direction of the presiding officer.
But the failure to state a purpose of the inquest allows for one to apply the purpose is potentially criminal. And if so, we bring it outside the scope of hand.
But the analysis is supposed to be in a facial challenge, not whether there is some scenario where this might be applied in violation of the Constitution. The analysis is supposed to be whether is there a way for this to be applied that complies with the Constitution. And if there is, then the challenge fails.
It makes a big difference. Terms of counsel's argument about separation of powers invading the executive branch decision in criminal prosecutions. But it also makes an important difference in how you apply HANA. Because if this falls within HANA, it would seem that the constitutional challenge has been addressed by that decision. If it carries with it a criminal outcome, then there's a considerable different analysis. Would you agree?
I would certainly agree that the question is whether or not HANA controls here. We have to go by the language of the ordinance, not by some sort of speculative outcome. But the distinction between HANA and Jenkins as I read them, is that the entire stated purpose of the government entity in Louisiana and Jenkins conducting that proceeding was to, the stated purpose was accuse someone of criminal action. That's not
the... But the critical component of both of those cases is that the purpose of the respective investigations was stated, which enabled the Supreme Court to identify how to approach the issue in the context of a purely civil investigation, as opposed to an investigation which had, with the carried with it, criminal results. In this case, the ordinance is silent as to its purpose, and the parties are left to imply what the purposes are, which places us in Never Never Land between those two U.S. Supreme Court cases.
But it certainly provides strong clues, Your Honor, that the, in Jenkins, again, the stated purpose was to criminally prosecute, to find someone to criminally prosecute. In this ordinance, all it talks about is no findings of fault, no findings of guilt. Anything that goes to a finding of fault or a finding of guilt, the presiding officer is supposed to jump in and stop it from happening. It's out of bounds.
But bear with me for a moment on that, because for this process to even get underway, you would have to have a finding that it was an officer-involved shooting leading to the death of an individual. So those facts are already found before we get to this stage, correct?
The coroner makes an initial determination whether an officer was involved in the death. And involved doesn't mean fault. Just
I understand. It's defined for an officer-involved shooting.
And those people become interested parties under the ordinance. And interested parties means that they are allowed, under the terms of the ordinance, to participate in the inquest.
Justice of the peace acting as the presiding officer is triggered by the antecedent finding that you have an officer involved death, right?
That's correct.
So what findings of fact are we to conclude that presiding officer would be directing the jury to find if they don't go to criminal fault or no criminal fault, which to me takes this case closer to Jenkins?
Well, I think that they're witnesses. I mean, they're designated as interested parties, but really they're witnesses.
But the object, Justice Hardesty's point is that we don't have a declared object in this ordinance. It doesn't say it's fish or fowl. It doesn't say, as in Hanna, that they're doing this to gather legislative facts that a legislature could use in determining whether certain legislation was or was not needed. Conversely, in Jenkins, they were trying to determine whether or not criminal act did or did not occur. My question is, in this statute, once you have it into the officer-involved shooting, they say there's not to be any findings of fault, but I don't know what the purpose of it would be if it weren't to find fault.
The purpose of it, and it was stated by, you know, there's a record here of what led up to this ordinance being enacted, and in fact, Sheriff Gillespie was in the newspaper this morning, and I think that the purpose is to have a fact-finding process, determine cause of death that's fair and transparent, which allows the public to hear what happened in an officer-involved death. So,
and those are the rules. I'm not disputing the legitimacy of that, but my question is, what facts are being found?
What did the officer see? What did the officer do? What did the officer hear? What did the officer say? Who, what, when, where, how, and why? All that would be a fair game, as long as, you know, there are constrictions in here too, in 2.1, 2.080 that compel the presiding officer to stay on point. This is not supposed to be a deposition. That it's
a fact finding, the collateral evidence is not supposed to come in at all. They're witnesses. What did they see? What did they hear? You know, what I just told you. And then the inquest panel marks yea or nay on the interrogatories, and then everybody goes home. And then the coroner uses this inquest, what was heard in this inquest, as one factor in making a determination of cause of death and issuing the death certificate.
Justifiable
or not? Well, no, that's not one of them. That's not one of them. That was taken out of the ordinance. All of this stuff about was it justifiable, was it criminal, was it a criminal act, who did wrong here, that was intentionally lifted out of this by the board, and all of this language was put in about it's fact-finding, it's not accusing anybody, placing fault on anybody.
Mr. Singh, are you saying that we're using this process just to determine the cause of death?
Yes.
For the death certificate?
Right, this is run by the coroner, not by the district attorney's
office. Why do we need it? What's it for? We just don't understand what it's for. I was a coroner's inquest hearing officer in the old days, and we had the 7-member jury, and people would ask questions from the audience, the old time. I know it's changed drastically since I've sat as an inquest hearing officer. I wasn't doing it. I was a private attorney that the counties would pay a minimum amount of money to sit on a Friday or whatever all day, and the jury would reach a verdict as to a justifiable, excusable criminal, which they never did while I was the inquest hearing officer. So I just want to make sure we want to tell the public what's the score.
It's to provide information. It's to provide information to the coroner in making his determination of death, and it's to provide information to anyone in the public who cares to hear it from the horse's mouth.
Is the officer on administrative leave at this time behind the desk or on the streets?
I don't think that's in the ordinance. I think that would be something that would be for the metro. I really can't speak to that.
Councilor Cochran, earlier, for the circle back to the beginning, we have a justice of the peace, we have a jurisdiction outlined in the statute. This is not within the jurisdiction. In other parts, we have a statute that defines that they'll participate. This is not one of those. We get into the separation of power issue. And the states have allowed this not to be a violation of separation of power. It's discretionary, it's not mandatory as it is here. Why isn't that enough just to throw it out because it's mandatory and not discretionary or voluntary?
Well, you're talking about the jurisdiction under 4.370 or imposing?
Just in general, looking at the case of order that we have signed between all both parties. In other states, you have similar statutes. It's voluntary or discretionary on part of the justice of the peace to sit for these. It's not mandatory, which then gets us into this whole rhubarb as a separation of power, which is not specifically stated, but that's an obligation of the justice of the peace.
But I don't think that it's necessary that it be voluntary, because I think that presiding over, and it's really two issues, but I think that presiding over the coroner's inquest by the justice of the peace is subsumed, does fall within.
Does that just, doesn't it push into the executive function, mandate to do that? By a state statute.
It doesn't make what he's doing, it doesn't make that what the justice of the peace is doing an executive function.
Well, we have a problem with the justice of the peace. His jurisdiction, so to speak, has been limited by statute, unless there's another state statute that authorizes in greater jurisdiction.
But we do have a state statute that provides that justice of the peace preside over coroner's inquest, and it's been there since
that's in the counties where they choose not to appoint a coroner.
Right, and
that complete disconnect there, and that's the simplest question. That's a very foundation of this for me.
But I think that interpreting it that way, where the mere hiring of a coroner by a county takes the justice of the peace off the table. It renders it unconstitutional for a county to have a justice of the peace preside over a coroner's inquest merely because they hire a
panel. How can the county commission dictate the jurisdiction of the justice of the peace? I mean, could they dictate other duties and obligations of the justice of the peace as well? When it's pursuant to our constitution that the legislature has that.
But again, we have an action by the legislature going all the way back to 1909 that says that justices of the peace are the people who preside over coroner's inquests. So I think it would be an absurd result to say that Clark County hires a coroner, justice of the peace can't preside over the coroner's inquest. If they do away with hiring a coroner, now the justice of the peace can preside over the inquest. Now we decide to hire one again. We go back and forth like switching off a light switch.
Doesn't provide for that, does it?
It
for the county to allow that jurisdiction.
I think that the exemption in 259.010 paragraph 2 that says that most of the provisions of this statute will not apply if the county hires a coroner pursuant to 244.163 was meant to free a county hiring a coroner from the structure that was set up by the legislature because they believed that every county needed a coroner. And if they didn't have a coroner, then under the statute they designated. It wasn't meant to restrict. It wasn't meant to restrict the county. Sorry.
How do we know that unless we look to the legislative history? Is there a basis to do that?
Well, then, I don't think there's a lot.
Are we speculating?
I think that we have to look at it logically and think about, well, why would they prevent a county like Clark County from using the justice of the peace, but not prevent Nye County or Churchill County from doing it simply because we decided to hire a coroner.
Mr. Stanley, I'd like to extend this question out a little bit. If this court were to hold the commission's designation of the justice of the peace to perform this function, could the county commission adopt an ordinance that requires the justice of the peace to perform a judicial function or some other function that is not prescribed by the legislature? Say, for example, the county commission says we're now going to require the justices of the peace sitting on all first degree trials.
Now, clearly, that would be allowed. I think that looking at this has to be taken at part and parcel with what the legislature did with 259 and designating justice of the peace as presiding over coroner's inquest.
I recognize that strain on a problem specifically for that reason. How does this court distinguish between the powers of the county commission to do what is being offered in this one? Versus what the hypothetical I thought.
Well, I mean, most of the hypotheticals would be unconstitutional. I think this is a special case because of 259. Because the legislature indicated that justices of the peace preside over coroner's inquest. And then there's an exemption there, okay, which raises the question, if we're going to apply this mechanically, without thinking about what we're really doing here, is that the way we should do it, or should we interpret in a way to preclude absurd results?
Well, it might very well be that the legislature's approach to this legislation has led to, from your point of view, an absurd result. But we have to accept the legislative enactments the way they're presented to us.
Well, I think that there's case law that says that You know, because 244.163 doesn't preclude a county which hires a coroner from using the rest of the visa. There's just an implication of that because of this exemption in 259.010. That's what I think makes it ambiguous, and that's what I think leads us down this road, this analysis of determining what's a reasonable result and what would be an absurd result. Thank you, Your Honors.
My name is Katrina Rogers, representing the Ex-Governor's status as amicus. And I'd briefly like to, I'm limited on time here, so I'd briefly like to address the function and the purpose of the inquest, and then move on to what really seems to be the heart of this matter, which is some jurisdictional issues. As to the purpose of the coroner's inquest, in CCO 2.12.080 subsection A, it deals with what the inquest panelists are assigned to determine, and that's the question of the fact about assigning fault or liability to the officers. And if you read that in conjunction with CCL 2.12.080M, the inquest is an investigatory fact-finding process and not an adversarial proceeding, that if you look at how the inquest process is implemented in Clark County and the considerations that were given to the inquest process when the reforms were made, the purpose of the inquest process is to look procedurally into how the death was occasioned. The facts that a person has died by unnatural means have already been determined by the coroner, and when it gets to the inquest process, they look at the procedures, the police policy, training, and practices that led to the death. And the need of the coroner's inquest process is to have transparency into those matters instead of merely finding only facts that say a person was either died by unnatural means or not. Also, briefly,
I'm sorry, Councilor, for shooting. Could you go back to your argument? Where in subparagraph A are you reading that this is simply a fact finding for cause of death? Let's go to the specific words. Here. He shall immediately notify the office of the prosecutor and police department or sheriff's office having jurisdiction so as to afford said prosecutor and police or sheriff's officials an opportunity to assist in the inquiry as to the cause of death.
Correct, Your Honor. And if you continue reading that, it continues to say that they deal only with questions of fact and not of guilt. There are questions of fact that may remain as to how a death was occasioned beyond that which a coroner would already determine, meaning that a death was occasioned by unnatural means and or that it was an officer involved in that. So there still may be questions of fact that remain that the inquest panel needs to address.
But coming back to the point that you were discussing, counsel, the object of this inquiry seems to be more directed toward triggering a criminal prosecution than it does anything else.
I don't think that's true, Your Honor. Inquest processes only take place after the prosecutor has determined that there are not going to be any charges filed. And in fact, in this case, DA Wolfson has said no charges would be filed. So the fact of the question of the fact that surround are what is left after a coroner determines that a death has been occasioned by unnatural means, and after the fact of that there's no criminal charges going to be pressed. There's still questions of facts that lead to police practices, to transparency, to upholding the public's trust with officers that the inquest would deal with.
Those are admirable objectives, not one of which is expressed in this ordinance.
I believe if you look into the legislative histories with the recommendations of what the coroner's inquest review panel has reviewed, and the recommendations that they made, I believe I attached as exhibits to our brief, you can infer that that is what the process is.
But you can equally infer the other way. Find any moment in deciding whether this case fits closer to Hannah or Jenkins is in the expression of the purpose of the statute itself.
And
we are left with a surmise. It's just as fair for the appellants in this case to say that the object here is to trigger a criminal prosecution as it is for the county to say that its objectives fit in line with some of those you just enumerated.
Well,
those are equally plausible outcomes. We're left to speculate as to what is the objective of this ordinance.
The appellant's
objective has a critical impact on whether it's constitutional.
Well, especially if it's true, if the district attorney determines no charges can be filed.
Correct. Which leads to the fact that it's even less of an accusatory or adversarial proceeding. And the appellants choose to make the argument that you need to read the plain letter of the statute, yet they associate words and reading more into the historical context of the statute only when it suits them, such as historical concepts of investigatory. But if you read the plain letter of the statute, CCO 2.12080 subsection N, ensures that the inquest is conducted as an investigatory proceeding and not an adversarial proceeding. The plain language of the ordinance in question states that it is a fact-finding proceeding only with, if you look at the intent of how it was enacted, the purpose of looking at procedure and...
You know, counsel, it's interesting to me that process that is intended to bring about transparency lacks the most fundamental transparent point, what its purpose is.
And I think that if you look at the cases that that support the position in Hanna, those cases delve into looking at when you read the statute as a whole, if there is language that is lacking regarding as to an express purpose, you need to look at how it's enacted and how the process actually occurs. And there are numerous cases that support the position that an inquest, one designed similarly to the one in Clark County, is not an adversarial and not an accusatory proceedings, where the appellants were not able to cite one case, aside from Jenkins, that an inquest is indeed an adversarial position.
Before your time is
yes.
Where are you going to catch on with your jurisdiction?
Absolutely, Your Honor. What I think that this court needs to remember is that you can't read this language in a vacuum. The separation of powers issues and the jurisdictional issues are inherently related. The question before the court is, did Clark County expand in jurisdiction by having justices of the peace preside over this inquest process? There has been express granted authority by the legislature to have justices of the peace do inquest processes and preside over them.
But they exclude counties such as Clark that have a coroner.
They make an exception for Clark County. The legislature had at its disposal tools that they could abuse to explicitly say, these do not apply, as in shall not, or these provisions shall not be used by these counties. They carve out an exception. And I think if you follow the logical conclusion of what the appellants are arguing.
The problem I have with that is Article 6, Section 8 of the Nevada Constitution states that the legislature shall fix by law the limits of the justices of the peace jurisdiction. And then the legislature enacts a statute that says JPs have only the jurisdiction that leave the legislature vested in them. And then in Chapter 259, you have a specific statute that authorizes justices of the peace to preside over coroners in question, not coroner counties. But the legislative grant of jurisdiction quite expressly does not extend to this situation. I'm troubled by that because we're inferring something that's running against the grain of Article
of Article 6, Section 8 of the Constitution itself? And when do we start deciding what's absurd and what isn't?
And Your Honor, I think in this case, if you follow the logic of the arguments that since it's not explicitly granted for justices of the peace to preside over inquests in Clark County, you can't invalidate subsection 4 of Chapter 259.050 without necessarily invalidating all of the processes of an inquest in Clark County. There are numerous sections in there that fall under the exception that the legislature carved out, and that is such an absurd argument that even appellants don't make it. And if the argument was that just one subsection of this code could not expressly be granted or used by Clark County, then the entire rest of the subsection
must
not.
But it's only the piece that deals with the justices of the peace's jurisdiction, because that's constitutionally derived.
The justices of the peace jurisdiction as far as the separation of powers issue, or the justices of the peace jurisdiction in the fact that is
prescription.
Yeah, that is the justices of the peace have been legislatively prescribed the authority to preside over coroner's inquest process.
So you see it as a categorical grant, and then it would follow that grant as for the Clark County coroner?
I think it's as an exception to the grant of authority, not as a withdrawal. Judge Kirshner, who heard this case below, correctly stated when it says it's not an issue of jurisdiction, it's an issue of location. And if you follow the logical conclusion of what the legislature intended, if you're going to read into it that it was an express removal of power, you can also read into that if it was to be an express removal of power, the legislature had tools to do that, and they chose not to. I believe my time is up. Thank you.
Well.
The Justice Court cannot take jurisdiction by intendment or implication. The Justice Court cannot take jurisdiction by intendment or implication. Hall versus Armstrong, 1865. That is precisely what the county is asking us to do here. It didn't prohibit us from doing it, therefore we can. We have jurisdiction by intendment or implication. With regard to Jenkins' stated purpose, the stated purpose of the commission in Jenkins, they accurately describe it as the stated purpose was criminal prosecution. No, page 41 of my brief. The stated purpose was, quote, investigation and findings of fact relating to violations or possible violations of criminal laws of the state of Louisiana. That's this ordinance. It's findings of fact relating to possible criminal law violations by police officers in causing death. I asked the court to look very closely at page 48 of my opening brief, the inquest interrogatories, which laid the factual predicate for the crime of murder in the second degree. Those interrogatories were taken directly out of the set of interrogatories that were prepared by Judge Kishner for use in the Lopez inquest. They're not taken out of context. They're not misleading. Please take a look at them. They use, you to avoid this concept that this is a criminal investigation or prosecution, they use euphemisms like, oh, it's the purpose is transparency. It's building public trust. It's officer accountability. What does that mean? It means a criminal investigation for purposes of prosecution. How do you build the public trust? You criminally investigate and prosecute police officers who potentially committed murder. How do you hold them accountable? If you find through a coroner's inquest that the force was unjustified and they act in excess of their authority and they committed murder, you prosecute them. That's how you have a transparent process, you build the public trust, and you hold them accountable. This is about a criminal investigation. If it's just the purpose of determining what the cause of death was, why do you need a prosecutor? And why is the prosecutor exercising his authority under the ordinance pursuant to Nevada revised statute permitting him to investigate and prosecute state employees who commit crimes in the course of their duties? It's a criminal investigation. They say, oh, this is a facial challenge. We need to interpret this constitutionally to the best of our ability. This doesn't mean throw common sense out the window. That's what they're asking you to do. You have to interpret it. You have to interpret this ordinance in the context of 200 years of history regarding coroner's inquests, their purposes, their functions, 100 years of history in the state of Nevada.
They say, oh, our jurisdiction is under Chapter 259. That's what allows us to do this. What is 259? It's a criminal investigation for purposes of prosecution. At the end of the day, the jury renders a verdict as to whether or not the accused was guilty of a crime. And the presiding officer, if the jury's verdict is guilty, he issues a warrant for the arrest of that person, and a criminal prosecution begins. They can't say that this has nothing to do with criminal prosecution, but we're deriving our jurisdiction from that statute.
Counsel, you have a minute before that. I hear your argument. It's nice. It's interesting. We have coroner's inquests across the country. If you're looking at specific points as to why this should be allowed or not allowed, amicus raise some points you wish to comment as to that. That would be interesting for me.
I feel like I commented as to the jurisdictional argument. There's the receiving jurisdiction by
counsel was attempting to answer Justice Hardesty's questions about purpose of this and stated or not stated, whether we should refer or not refer.
I think. Okay, my comment to that is that you have to construe this statute with regard. There's a rule of statutory construction that says when a statute uses words that have a historical, statutory, common law, usual meaning and purpose, and it doesn't say that those words were not used for that meaning and purpose, there is a statutory presumption that it has that meaning and purpose.
Wait a second, let me back you up. I mean, the amicus is making the point that this case is closer to Hanna than to Jenkins because the coroner's inquest is being used to investigate whether a different management style needs to be adopted in the Metropolitan Police Department, for example. I mean, because the statute's purpose is unspecified, we're left in a cipher in the middle of inferring, is it criminal prosecution or is it something else? So what should we do in that setting, and how does that ambiguity fall under the Jenkins Hanna continuum? That's the question that we've got.
I hear it, Your Honor. My suggestion would be to apply the rule of statutory construction that says if they use words that have an ordinary and usual historical meaning, they mean those words to have that historical meaning unless they say otherwise. They did not say otherwise in the statute. The statute was built upon a historical body of 200 years that informs you as to what the purpose of the statute is. It uses a prosecutor pursuant to his prosecutorial authority to investigate and to prosecute. This is a criminal investigation. If that's not what this is, then what is it? It's a dog and pony show. And the ACLU and the county's telling you that's not what the purpose of this ordinance was. The whole purpose of this ordinance was transparency, building public trust, and holding officers accountable. What is that? Criminal prosecution if they commit murder. Lastly, if I may.
No, I have a question.
Yes, Your Honor.
You made a representation that the result of the process is a jury verdict, which results in the issuance of a warrant following the arrest of the officers. Where in the ordinance does it say that?
Under Chapter 259, Your Honor. Not under this ordinance. Under Chapter 259, it says that. And what I'm saying is they can't have their cake and eat it. They can't say, oh, we have jurisdiction to preside over coroner's inquest because of Chapter 259. Well, wait a second. Chapter 259 gives the justice of the peace jurisdiction to preside over a very specific type of coroner's inquest. Criminal investigation for purposes of criminal prosecution. You can't say that gives us jurisdiction. However, this isn't a criminal investigation for purposes of criminal prosecution. No, I'm sorry if I didn't intend to misrepresent that language is not in the source. It's not. It's in Chapter 259. Lastly, real quickly, we're out of time. I'm sorry.
I want to thank all counsel for their arguments. Thanks, Patrick. And I know it's getting submitted, and we'll listen to all of them.